As an added benefit to reoccurring donors, we are sending out DCO face masks to any monthly contributors for 3 months or more at the $5 plus level. Please send your size preference, either large or youth or small size, along with membership email and mailing address to info@dcontario.org. And you can check out what they look like in the show notes.
This podcast was specifically created for Distress and Crisis Ontario organizations and their volunteer responders to provide training and educational assistance on a variety of topics. As information evolves and changes, these podcasts are meant to offer ongoing support with the goal of updating them on an ongoing basis. We thank the volunteer responders and the contributors to this podcast. Please visit our website, dcontario.org, for more information and how to access free mental health services. Thank you.
This is Caitlin Plant, Program Manager for Distress and Crisis Ontario, and today I am joined by returning guest Marilyn Clark, qualifying registered psychotherapist and a candidate art therapist, to discuss her research exploring the role that creative engagement can play in fostering healing and meaning-making for individuals within the suicide loss community. Please be aware that we will be discussing the topic of suicide today, which may be difficult for some listeners. Marilyn's goal is to raise audience awareness about the potential benefits of using art therapy as a mental health modality to promote healing. As a suicide loss survivor, Marilyn is committed to contributing to ways in which she can support, inform, and improve future support approaches for survivors of suicide loss. In the notes for this episode, she has shared a link for listeners to answer the question, how do you see art therapy within your community as a potential tool of support in your client population? So Marilyn, thank you for joining us today. In case anyone listening has not heard your previous episodes with us that we released in April, could you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, thank you, Caitlin. I'm a Toronto Art Therapy Institute student and a qualifying psychotherapist, as Caitlin has mentioned, currently working at the Delton Glebe Counseling Center in Waterloo. And I'm also the principal investigator for the research that we will be discussing today. And it's called Healing for Suicide Loss Survivors Through Individual Online Art Therapy. I come from working in the violence against women sector with individuals who have experienced intimate partner violence. I work from a narrative, strength-based, trauma-informed lens. And just for audience listeners, a trauma-informed lens understands and considers the pervasive nature of trauma and promotes spaces of healing and recovery that does not pathologize a person's response to trauma, but rather sees certain responses as adaptive. And so a trauma-informed lens is inherently characterized by empathic and supportiveness, support with a keen awareness of how systems can inadvertently re-traumatize a person. Yeah, that's a little bit about me.
So what led you to art therapy as a tool for healing?
Well, I would start with my childhood. You know, two major influences in my childhood were of art and the emphasis on community engagement. And so I attribute my love of art to my mother, Mary, who was a gifted artist, and she provided many creative opportunities in my childhood, myself and my five siblings. Yeah, so I believe that these experiences instilled a sense of how art making can serve as a tool for healing. And very sadly, my mother died in 1990 by suicide at the age of 52. She suffered from bouts of acute depression, and it was during this time of sorrow that I turned my attention more intently to the outlet of creativity. as a way to cope and express my feelings. So it's the act of art making is highly personal for me. And this feels very much, the engagement art therapy feels very organic and relevant to my life experience.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. So I'm wondering now if you could tell us a little bit more about your research.
So at the heart of my research, I sought to address the problem or the dilemma that most suicide survivors or those bereaved by suicide are plagued by the need to make sense of the death. And so how do we make meaning out of a death? How do we reformulate our prior systems of meanings? And as grief associated with suicide is complex, there's no question that deriving meaning is an ongoing and challenging prospect. So at the heart of my research and motivating my research is the simple question, what role can creative engagement play and foster healing and meaning making for individuals within the suicide loss community? So my rationale around my research question is that that artistic engagement will foster meaning making and promote healing, quite simply. Mm-hmm. And the project is intended to primarily, my participants are number one, but also in doing what I'm doing today and talking about it, it's intended to strengthen understanding of issues surrounding suicide by cultivating broader perspectives, ultimately, and breaking down stigma. So this is at the heart of what I'm doing. And I had six individual participants who participated in six online art therapy sessions over a period of 6 weeks. So a total of 36 sessions. And the work was absolutely phenomenal. The work within this space was intimate, and the courage and the trust within the space was really something that was very humbling for me. And the scope of loss and the variety of losses, father's, mother, brother, friend, partners, it was very eye-opening and very generous of my participants. So I feel that the purpose was met in the sense that the participants were able to provide illuminating context into their experience of suicide and the loss associated with it.
So it definitely sounds like you've been doing some really important work here. And yeah, I'm wondering if there's been any surprises or outcomes that you didn't expect from your work.
Oh yeah, there were surprises, and the capacity of individuals to use their pain to change their lives for the better. I mean, the notion that individuals can adapt, and of course I saw that in my own family, the ability to adapt in the wake of an incredibly painful and a traumatic experience. So this is always, again, very humbling. And so the participants in the study were more open to the experiences found in the art making than I could possibly have imagined. Incredibly generous, as I said, honest and willing to explore through both art making and actually writing through their artist statements. That was a very rich experience for me as well. I was struck by their striving to understand, to make sense of the traumatic experiences in the context of their own lives and their own relationships with the deceased, and how all the participants in their own ways were seeking to embrace life. This was, again, very moving for me. Yeah, so those were big surprises. And as I mentioned before, when someone dies by suicide, the story surrounding the event or the death itself has a way of overshadowing the person. And this is very painful. And the art invitations were chosen in deliberation to really look at that relationship so that they could re-experience and perhaps understand more fully and more deeply that relationship. So this was all very theoretical at first, and then became very much alive during the actual process of working with my clients. And so my participants rather. So So one of the things that I would like to share with you, maybe a few responses, anonymous responses, of course, from my participants, Caitlin.
Absolutely.
The first thing that we did was we did collage making. And collage is an optimal first activity because it's simple and accessible, and it's a way to ease art making fears for individuals. So I'll just read an excerpt. The words within my collage represent a glimpse of what I hold on to as I continue to live my life, while honoring all of the amazing qualities and characteristics about him. This collage inspires me to be gentle and kind with my emotional well-being while continuing to grieve such a profound loss. If you don't have the added benefit of seeing the collage, the next one we did was body mapping, and body mapping is meant to promote ways in which grief is held in the body, acknowledging pain as it's very important to achieving restoration within ourselves. And the body mapping was, again, very, very profound experience for many of the participants. So from the top of my head, I feel grief as the heaviness of a thundercloud. Then moving down to my neck, the sensation manifests as the weight of the heavy rocks that generate a very tight, heavy, and stiff feeling. Moving towards my chest, the heaviness continues. Only here it feels as though someone is standing on my chest. So this is an excerpt that illustrates that grief is felt very profoundly within the body, and acknowledging that and giving some tenderness towards the body and understanding that it lives within the body is very important. And these individuals they had lived this experience and understood intuitively that it does live within the body. And next we worked with paint, and the fluidity of paint allows for spontaneous expressions to unfold. And so just an example of how somebody might respond. One of the participants said, "I loved the string painting activity. I found that I struggled with naming my grief and the other complicated emotions along with it. Intuitive art making will hopefully make me continue to process through my complex emotions. I now believe in the validity and helpfulness of it." And then we had clay. We worked with clay, session 4. And clay is intended to foster emotional grief repair in celebrating and honoring aspects of the deceased. And so we're moving into the clay, and it reminds us of impermanence, and it reminds us that nothing, of course, is permanent, but it gives us a keen sense of the moment as well. So it can be a very moving experience as well. And so working with clay, one client says, "Before I started working with the clay, I found myself thinking the clay would allow me to get some of the darker feelings related to my grief, because it can be worked physically. But when I closed my eyes and started working with the clay and let my hands rather than my mind guide me, they, my hands, didn't want to be rough with the clay, but rather gentle. When I considered separating the clay into multiple pieces and started to do so, my hands told me not to do it. It didn't feel right. They wanted me to keep the clay whole. Grieving for me has been like that, an ongoing attempt to put the puzzle pieces back together. Some days it's clear how they fit together, and other days it's more puzzling. I'm grateful that those kinds of days when it's clearer are fewer in number recently, as are those in which I want to smash and destroy the puzzle. Yeah, however, I do try and honor those days as well, and those difficult feelings when they arise." So that was working with clay, and each participant had something very meaningful to say about that experience. And then we move on to more restoration-orientated invitations, and we constructed memory flowers out of paper and branches. And the idea was to to foster emotional grief repair in celebrating and honoring aspects of the deceased that could otherwise, again, as I've mentioned, be overshadowed by the traumatic death. And so the memory flowers were really beautiful, and I'm sorry your listeners can't see how lovely they were, but I'll read a little bit about it. The paper flowers unfurling. These paper flowers are joined together on a branch, but reflected two different lives. One flower, red and fiery, is tightly wound and just beginning to bloom. This flower has petals and jagged edges and blooms with a leaf that is dark and busy. This leaf reads, "Remembering you in your entirety, a source that will always remind me of my friend." And so the next thing we did was another restoration-orientated invitation called Creating Safe Strength Stones. And the Strength Stone invitation was intended to tap into the participants' resiliency and to help foster a different narrative so that the rebuilding or continuing bonds are based on a strength-based narrative is really a powerful prospect. And so I will read the last excerpt. I was invited to paint rocks, with each rock representing an element or skill that's helped me in grieving. On the first rock, I painted shrubs and trees and a tree in gold. This represents how nature has been a place of calm and comfort for me, even when I felt out of place where I'm living or where I am in my life. I've always been at home in nature. So, and she, this individual goes on to talk about all of her rocks in quite detail and what it has meant to her. And I'll just read one more excerpt. On my second rock, a round one, round black one, I drew a mandala designed, drew a mandala design centered around a gold bee. In reflecting on this design, which I did intuitively, I think the V represents female energy and the strength inherent in that, to that energy. In grief, I have relied heavily on my mom and grandma for guidance and support. I've integrated them more into my life and a way of being, which has made me stronger. Those are just a few examples of the impact of the art making experience for the participants in this study.
Those were some very incredible excerpts. And yeah, I do think with this being a audio medium, we are obviously missing out a little bit on seeing those, but even just hearing how impactful this has been is incredible.
Yes.
So has there been any one highlight of the whole experience for you?
Oh, any one highlight? I just think the fact that we made it through six sessions with each individual, and that week after week, the growing of the relationship, the therapeutic relationship, really is always a highlight, because you deepen the understanding and of the individual, and they get to know you. So for me, that was really, and we get to know each other through the artwork. I am not doing artwork, but I certainly am supporting the facilitation of the artwork. So just as a sidebar, all of the individuals, this is online art therapy, all of the individuals received an art package that had similar art materials within the package, and they worked from that. So it was done online and we managed to do it. And I was very nervous at first. And I thought, I'm not sure how I can do this. This is art therapy. This is meant to be done together, side by side, with me being beside my participants or my clients. And the pandemic allowed me to re-envision the idea of how we support another person. And it was very profound and meaningful, as I've mentioned. Yeah, so.
So when it comes to this podcast today, is there one key piece of understanding that you hope for people to take away?
Yeah, well, I think I would like individuals to understand that one of the themes that continues to be prevalent is the theme of stigma. And this is something I experienced myself, whether it be self-stigma or stigma within the community. We must consider that people bereaved by suicide loss experience stigma. And we can consider even the language, such as committed suicide, the idea that somebody has committed a crime or that it is something that should be deemed a crime. This language, although we've tried very hard, we've been trying for 30 years to destigmatize the language, it's still used quite commonly in our everyday vernacular. So that's just one example. To think about the stigma and to talk and to reach out to others who have lost somebody through suicide. And this is something that I would say, the reaching out piece, don't be afraid to reach out. If somebody's not ready, they'll tell you. And you may just open up that door for the individual to talk and to derive comfort in talking about the deceased, or to really find ways to build and rebuild community. They need community members to move in and lean into their loss. So that's one thing I would say is very important. And I just would like to say that, you know, I'm going to read a little quote here by Dr. Jill Lamore. She's a researcher. Dr. Lamore is a researcher, an American researcher and clinician in suicidology. And she says that the one single event of a pebble falling in the water affects all that is around it with multiple vast extending ripples. Death has that ripple effect as well, setting off a disturbance that moves across time and space. Just reflect on that, the impact that suicide loss or any loss in all senses, any tragic or sudden loss, and loss, expected loss even, it sets off these ripple effects, and we must be aware of that. So this is what I'd like to, you know, just leave that idea of how do we destigmatize and how do we talk about suicidal ideation? How do we talk about suicide and bereavement? These are topics that are near and dear to my heart. And as a researcher, I'm becoming more and more invested in ways in which we can respond to this population. Just knowing, that over 4,000 people die by suicide each year in Canada. And for every suicide, there are many more who will attempt suicide. And it's the top leading cause of death. It is one of the top 10 leading causes of death in the world. And so we really need to be aware of that this is something that happens, and to face it and to help others. So this would be my very simple message. It's simple yet complicated message. Yeah.
Well, as we wrap things up today, I just want to thank you again for coming on and sharing all of this with us. And I'm just wondering if there's anything else that you would like to share today that we haven't already touched on.
Well, I would like to say that September is National Suicide Awareness Month. And September 10th is World Suicide Prevention Day. So September 10th, particularly, is the designation of this day, provides a chance for broader conversations with communities to promote broader understandings about suicide. And so, just to be aware that there are activities in your community, there will be, just be alerted to that, and to know that there are people in the community that are really gathering together to bring awareness to suicide loss and the prevention, of course, of suicide. So I wanted to shout out to those two very important designations in September.
Yes, and we also, as an organization, have a lot of members that are doing things as well for World Suicide Prevention Day. So you can also go to our website and find your closest location, and you can click through to them and see what they've got going on as well.
Absolutely fantastic.
Thank you again, Marilyn.
Thank you so much, Caitlin. Take care.
Hi, I'm Damien, one of the editors of the DCO Learning Forums podcast. We are committed to providing the most current and up-to-date information. With your help, we can make it better. Please consider going to tips.pinecast.com/jar/distress-and-crisis-ontario.com or by clicking the link in the show notes. And by donating, monthly contributors will be able to access a special podcast feed. In it, we'll have additional content and some more in-depth pieces on some of our most popular topics. Thank you.